Welcome into ESPN FC. We're going to get straight to everything that we've seen today in the action. You just saw Italy against North Macedonia. That's where the shock of the day is. Kay Murray and Shaka Hislop here with you. We'll also be hearing from Seb and Herc at the Azteca ahead of Mexico against the USA. It is a big show full of World Cup qualifying action. Let's get to that game then, shall we? It is the story of the day. Italy taking on North Macedonia. It is the semi-final playoff, and this is how it all got started out. 30th minute, perhaps Italy could see fortunes weren't going to go their way. Domenico Berardi shot too weak here.
Should have done better with this, Berardi. Keeper makes an absolute mess trying to pass out to the back. Only finds Berardi, whose effort was almost as bad as the keeper's attempted pass.
And now we go into stoppages. Still goalless at this point. Alexander Trajkovski tries his luck from distance and scores. This is a stadium he knows well. He used to play there for 5 years.
Picks this ball up a long way out. Jorginho thinks it's handball, so instead of closing him down, just appeals to the referee. Trajkovski tries his arm from a long way out, and one of the few times that North Macedonia got over the half line, catches that so cleanly. Beats Donnarumma. And the North Macedonian just go crazy.
What a massive, massive goal it was. Italy desperate at this point, not wanting to miss out on another World Cup. João Pedro trying to redirect the shot into the net, but it goes wide.
Comes at him very quickly, and one of the few occasions that North Macedonia don't get in the way. João Pedro trying to redirect, but too tight an angle.
What a big win for North Macedonia. They will now go through to the playoff final on Tuesday, where they'll face Portugal. Taking a look at the stats here and just all of those shots from Italy, only five of them on target though. All the possession going their way. Really, no excuses for Italy, something we will get into, but let's just take a look at the victors here, shall we? This is the North Macedonia locker room. Let's not forget, this is a team who won away in Germany in qualifiers as well. They cannot be underestimated, Shaka.
Absolutely cannot. And despite the lopsided nature of the stats, I don't think they give enough credit to how good North Macedonia were defensively, throwing their body in the way of everything and somehow get rewarded for it.
They were the 17-1 underdog to win this game. It is Italy failing to qualify for a second straight World Cup. Just one win in their last six World Cup qualifiers, four draws and a loss. Their first home loss in a World Cup qualifier. They had been unbeaten in a previous 59 home World Cup qualifying matches. And playing the game in Palermo was also to do with the passion of the locals, untainted by club rivalry, hoping that they would be able to will their side onto a win. It wasn't to be in the end, and there is much to discuss as we welcome in Frank Leboff, Gabriele Marcotti and Don Hutchison. Gab, I've got to start with you as the Italian here. What are your thoughts on what we saw today?
Well, look, I think you can only, I want to say out this, because I know people are watching all over the world in different confederations. UEFA are extremely, they have a generous World Cup allocation. They have 13 spots, okay? And that means that you've got a margin for error. You get bites of the cherry. And Italy had that. They would have won their group. If not, and we wouldn't, they would have been watching this game on TV tonight, you know, sitting back with a cold beverage. But no. Against Switzerland, they dominate, miss a penalty, a win turns into a draw. Against Switzerland in the other game, they dominate, miss a penalty, and a win turns into a draw. Against Bulgaria at home, they dominate, give up a stupid goal on the counter, and a win turns into a draw. So that's three get-out-of-jail cards. And then tonight, it was a bridge too far. And again, they take the game to the opposition. They're completely devoid of cutting edge in the final third, but they do take a lot of shots. I think if you count block shots too, it's 32 shots on goal, 70% possession, as we saw there. But it doesn't matter because this is football. And this is where a country of 1.8 million ranked 67th in the world, like North Macedonia, you know, the guy takes a shot of his life at the end. And he gets, and they're through, and they get to face Cristiano, and they're 90 minutes away from going to the World Cup, and I think you have to accept that that this is also football. You do not deserve to be there if you slip up too many times in key moments.
Gab, we're obviously recording pretty soon after this game's finished, but so far, what's the reaction been from the Italian side of things over in Italy?
Yeah, well, both the FA president, Gabriela Gravina, spoke, as did Mancini and so on. There's shock, there's disappointment. We went through all this 4 years ago. But I think also there was a willingness to recognize that situation's rather different than 4 years ago. This is an Italy side that I think actually, or certainly most people in Italy think, has played well. Before tonight, they had lost just one of their previous 39 games. They had set a new world unbeaten record. They had won the Euros, and generally they did it by taking the game to the opposition, by playing attractive, attacking football, obviously lacking a cutting edge. And, you know, we saw that to some degree at the Euros as well, but it's very different. You're trying to, you know, do a handbrake turn on 100 years of history here. And I think Mancini's created a very positive environment, very positive vibes around it. I'm pretty sure he's not going to be sacked. And I think the only way he's not back as manager is if he decides to resign. I don't think he's going to do that. You know, there is a sense that you're definitely on the right track, but this is a learning opportunity because you can't screw up so many times and you have so many chances to remedy it and then you don't do it.
Don, how shocked are you to see Italy lose this game?
It's embarrassing, Kay, to be honest. I was with a group of ex-professionals who were commentating on different games tonight and lots of commentators. And we were talking about the different games, the different permutations, who was going to struggle, who was going to go through. And we all sat there and thought Italy are absolute bankers to win tonight. So you come in after the game and you hear the news that North Macedonia have won. We've seen the goal earlier. Brilliant strike. But you can't just bury this result. You can't. If you're in charge, if you're Mancini or at a higher level, boardroom level, you can't. You have to take a step back and you've got to look at this and think, this can't happen. Italian football, this can't happen. This freak result against North Macedonia shouldn't happen. And if it does, you can't bury it. You've got to look for reasons why. Beforehand, I was looking at the team. I was thinking good, strong 11. I looked at the bench. No Belotti, obviously. No Chiesa, massive players that have been missing. João Pedro was on the bench, who plays for Cagliari and is a very good pro. But after this starting 11, and his best 11 was on the pitch, there wasn't a lot to turn to. And as I said, you can't bury this result. This is a major shock. And, you know, football's football. Different fans, different countries will be having a little laugh and having a giggle at Italian football tonight. And the Federation now have got to swallow it and they've got to take it on the chin. That's all you can do.
If you can't bury that result then, Frank, as Gab was saying, he thinks Mancini's okay and will stay in his job, won't be sacked. Is that the right decision? Should he stay in the role? I mean, they just won the Euros last summer.
Yeah, that's the thing you shouldn't forget. You know, 8 months ago, they were the European champion and you have to pay credit to what Mancini did. So is it the player's fault? Is it the coach's fault? Is it the federation's fault? Everybody has to step back, as Don said, and make their own judgment about what happened today. Mancini showed throughout, you know, his managing as a coach of Manchester City or some other clubs, and as a national team coach, that he has the talent and he can again manage to give the best and do the best for the national team. I remember Raymond Domenech being kept, you know, after the disaster of 2008, and we saw what happened in 2010 with the national team. But we shouldn't put Mancini at the same level as Domenech. I'm pretty sure Italy will keep him. I would love him to stay and to show to the world that he can bounce back and puts back Italy to the level that they were before.
Gab, how desperate are Italy for a clinical out-and-out striker, a number nine?
Well, you know, that paper is over a lot of cracks. You know, I was thinking back and I think things are moving in the right direction. I think the last thing we need now is one of those overreactions, root and branch reviews, go and review the everything that's happening at youth level, blah, 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 the under 15s. No, I think they're already moving in the right direction. Just going to take time for these things to go through. But at the risk of stating the obvious, all those years of the Italy sides that I grew up with, where it was all about staunch defending and kind of living in fear, and then some superstar, Del Piero or Totti or Paolo Rossi in 1982, or Roberto Baggio, somebody does something magical at the other end and you win. I don't think you can win in the modern game. And Italy certainly don't have a player like that right now. Maybe a few years from now, maybe Zaniolo, I don't know. But maybe Chiesa when he's fit. I don't think so. they're on that level. And when you've got those attacking superstars, and I mean Captain Obvious here, but you know, when Italy won the World Cup in 2006, they had people up front named Totti, Del Piero, Luca Toni. This is just a completely different level from where they are now. And so they have to, but they have strengths in other places. And then that's how they tried to play, and that was through the midfield and creating chances. But, you know, you have to accept that on the one, you can't overreact to this. You have to take, I think, a broader view. Accept the fact that you didn't deserve that. You don't deserve to be there because you made mistakes. You had a lot of chances and you didn't take them. But equally, you can't go out and say, oh no, it's year zero again. It's not a grown-up attitude to have, I think.
Shaka, do you agree with what Gab's saying, that you can't overreact to this result?
Listen, I understand you can't overreact to this result as a one-off. And while I understand all that Gab is saying in defense of Mancini and actually support it, the fact of the matter is, since Italy won the Euros, they've only managed to beat Lithuania in World Cup qualifying since. And that, the criticism from around Mancini is his failure to arrest that slide ever since that. And while, yes, you can point to the Switzerland games and dominating and the Miss Jorginho penalty, if you accept the praise for winning the Euro final on penalties, then you also have to accept the criticism when that penalty doesn't go in, and that is a defining result in much the same way. So I understand what you're saying, Gab. I really do. But for me, I just don't think Mancini has done enough since they were crowned Euro champions in terms of arresting that slide. But given the body of work before, he's earned the right to stay on. He's earned the right to see Italy through this storm.
But Don, when you do look at Italy right now, you can say that many people could be concerned that there are problems when you look at what's happened to them, the Italian sides in the Champions League. Now this, another World Cup where they haven't qualified. Do the problems run deeper, in your opinion?
Listen, I work on Italian football and I love Italian football, and I still think Italian football is strong. And I do think there's teams that are really, really strong. And I think the Italian Federation, I think Italian supporters are going through a phase where I think they can see the club sides coming back. And I even see the individuals, when I look at Mancini's squad when everyone's fit, still being a very, very good team and good squad. Lots of players missing. And it's one of them where you're sort of looking at it and you're thinking, it's still a good team. It's still a good squad. They should still have enough. But then you go back and you go, you can't lose to North Macedonia. You can't. And Gab's right in a way where you can't just go, right, it's easy. Let's go and look at the 15s. Let's go and look at the 16s. That's going to get you nowhere in the short term. The short term is finding out what Mancini wants to do. I think they'll honour whatever he wants to do. If he wants to resign, I think they'll take that and they'll do it. If not, I think they'll stay with him, stay patient. But they've got to regroup. At some point, Mancini and his coaching staff and the group of players and the squad of players have got to regroup from this. Now, this is not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen next week. It's going to be even painful when the World Cup starts in November. That's going to be even worse for the Italian fans watching on and not seeing Italy in a World Cup. And it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. So it's a massive call on what happens in Mancini's future. But I still think that's a good team and squad and players to work with.
Frank, what do you think about this being a reflection of where Italian football's at the moment?
Well, I've known the Italian football in the 90s, where this football was the best football in the world, with AC Milan, with Juventus and some others, and Inter Milan. And I saw the descent of that culture and that Serie A, where I don't recognize the team that I used to see and the power of those clubs. And for me, the national team is only the reflection of what we have in Italy. So they can do well at some point. We see Atalanta doing well. The football is improving, is more offensive, is more entertaining. But the results are not there anymore if you compare with Spain, England, for example, or even Germany. So something has to happen. And I agree with the guy. It cannot be forgiven. You have to learn your lesson from there. You have to work on the mentality of the players. You know, I have a thought of Donnarumma and Verratti, who 2 weeks ago lost dramatically with Paris Saint-Germain in Champions League, and tonight they lost against North Macedonia. It must be awful for those players, but they have to react. They are so-called very talented players, maybe the two best players in their position, but they have to show that to the world. And we all talk about one thing when we are professional, it's consistency. And we don't see consistency in Italy anymore, like we see in England, in Germany, or in Spain.
Gab, I'll give you the final word on this, on what this actually means for Italian football.
I think it's a reality check. I think the mature reaction is to look at where you are, look why you went out. I agree with the boys that, you know, you can't make excuses for it, and there can be no excuses for it. But equally, your question should move on to what is the next step going forward? You know, how do we make sure that we qualify for the next Euros and for the next World Cup? And I think it is continuing to play like this. There are fair questions about generations of talent and where these top players are. You know, is the national team a reflection of the leagues? I don't know. I mean, Belgium and France are pretty good. Their leagues aren't on a par with, say, the Premier League, you know. So I don't know that those two things always go necessarily hand in hand. But what I do think is Italy cannot stop playing the way they're playing right now, which is playing with courage, dominating the opposition, wanting the ball, pressing. This is how top teams play. Now, if you go out and you do it with players who aren't necessarily top players in certain positions, then yeah, then maybe you'll get beaten, especially if on top of that, you screw things up. But this is the way forward. I don't think there's any going back to something else. And my sense is, from what they said tonight, that's how the FA feel about it as well.
A special edition of the Gab and Jules podcast coming up on Friday. No doubt there will be a lot of talk about this very topic. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Gareth Bale was on fire for Wales to beat Austria to book a spot in the final, where they will await the winner of Scotland and Ukraine. That will be played in June, as that game's been delayed. After this win, he said, "I'll run into the ground for this country." It's quite the difference between country and club when it comes to Gareth Bale, as stats show it. 4 games for Wales, 5 for Real Madrid, 5 goals for Wales, 1 for Real Madrid, and just the 0 assists for Real Madrid and 1 for Wales. It is fair to say there is a different feeling when he plays for both of these sides, Don.
Oh, the Real Madrid fans must be absolutely watching on tonight, going absolutely bonkers after the El Clasico mauling the other day. And then they just kick back and they watch the results come in and they go, Bale scored 2 again for Wales. I mean, he just turns it on, doesn't he? He's got something inside him, Kay, where it's all about Wales for him now. He wants to produce. He wants to be a legend. He is a legend. He's scoring goals. That relationship between Real Madrid is fractured. It'll never be repaired, ever, ever. But listen, I mean, he scores two goals tonight and he takes them one step closer. I mean, amazing job he's done.
Yeah, amazing job he's done. It is strange to see, though, when you see it, and it doesn't come as any surprise anymore with what we see at Real Madrid, but not well enough to play in El Clásico, but well enough to play in this game for Wales.
And not just play, but produce that kind of a performance. And it really is astounding to see. I'm not sure how you even begin to explain it. Listen, we've spoken time and time again about players and their affiliations or how strongly they feel between club and country. You know how I feel about that myself. And Gareth Bale, it's even more extreme. Given how not just ineffective, but how he doesn't seem to even want to step up to be counted for Real Madrid. Yet whenever Wales calls, whenever he pulls on that Welsh shirt, it is a totally different player. Somebody who steps up to whatever is asked of him and produces performances like that. And again, those two goals, regardless of who we're talking about, regardless of the opposition, regardless of the stage, are both of them absolutely world-class. And how do you explain Gareth Bale on a Thursday when he is just totally absent on the Sunday for Real Madrid and has, as he has been all season long? I'm not sure how to even begin.
Yeah, Frank, have you ever seen such a difference in a player for their national side and for their club side like Gareth Bale?
I never seen that, and it's amazing to see the difference of body language that we can see with him, where he seems to be the worst player in the world when he plays for Real Madrid and being one of the best players in the world when he plays for Wales. And we have to read what he wants to say. Every time he scores, you know, he shows the shirt, he shows the badge of Wales, and I feel, I feel that he's angry. He's angry at Real Madrid. I don't know if Real Madrid can be responsible for what happened to Gareth Bale when he signed there and the way that he played. But he seems to be angry. And every time he plays, he wants to show to Real Madrid that they're wrong. And every time he scores, he wants to show that Wales is more important than Real Madrid. It's sad in a way, because we all know that Gareth Bale is a fantastic player. And it's only due to himself to change that. So I think the best for him is to leave Real Madrid as soon as possible, play for another big club, show that he's still Gareth Bale, because we all know that it's possible because we see the performances he can have for his country. So it's time for him to go back to normality, meaning playing for a good club, but at his best, and showing the same with his country.
But to Frank's point, I don't think Gareth Bale was that great for Spurs. He gets an opportunity to go back to his former club. He was good. He was better than he has been for Real Madrid. But I still not even close to what you see of him as a Welsh player. So it's who exactly is he angry with here? Because when he's given an opportunity to show his stuff week in, week out, at club level, again, he was good. He was better. But I don't think he was anything like you'd expect of Gareth Bale.
Gab, you know Ancelotti. What do you think he's thinking watching those goals from Gareth Bale and that performance tonight?
Yeah, I suspect Ancelotti maybe knows a little bit more about what's going on and Gareth Bale than we do. But what I would love to hear, you've got ex-pros there with you, people who played at the highest level. All this stuff about how, you know, when a player comes back and hasn't played in a while and it's his first game back, we're all like, well, he's not match fit. We can give him a run out, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Is it all just nonsense? Because Gareth Bale doesn't play, and yet he comes back, plays for Wales, and he looks like he's 100% fit, and he's a difference maker straight away. Is Gareth Bale just some, like, freak of nature and normal rules don't apply to him? Please educate me.
Tell us, Don. No,
I think what it is, I mean, I can't get into the mind of Gareth Bale because I always wanted to play every single minute for my club and my country. I would never, ever have the divide. Where I think with Gareth Bale, I think Robert Page looks after him a lot more. And I'm not saying that Real Madrid don't look after him. I think what's happening with Real Madrid, from what I hear inside Tottenham when he was at Tottenham and Real Madrid, is he doesn't train a lot. So when he's at Real Madrid and he doesn't train that hard from a Monday to a match day, how can then Ancelotti look at him when he hasn't been training that hard, i.e. on the grass, and he thinks, well, I can't pick him because he's not fit. So I think when he's away with Wales, and I think what happened when he was at Tottenham, he was doing a lot of work sort of in the gym, on the bike, swimming pools, this, that and the other, where managers, especially like Robert Page, who's a friend of his, and he could look after him a little bit more, and he knows how important he is to Wales. Gareth Bale to Real Madrid is not that important, so he doesn't feel loved. So he will not go in the grass and train with an injury, where when he's playing for Wales, Robert Page can stick him in the gym, he can look after himself, and then he can say, right, you get yourself ready for Austria. Right. I just need you for that hour. That's all I need you for. And then tomorrow he'll be sore, he'll be sore the day after. But when you play for a club like Real Madrid, you can't be on a bike 5 days of the week and then expect to play for Real Madrid. It's just not going to work. It's not going to happen. So I think that's where the difference is.
Thanks, Don. As for the last of the paths, it will be Poland taking on Sweden. Sweden booking their spot in the final after an extra time win over the Czech Republic.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So much football and World Cup qualifying here on ESPN. CAF World Cup qualifying looks like this on Friday. Plenty of matches to feast your eyes on. We'll be discussing all of them as usual back on ESPN FC. And we'll now welcome into the show Nedim Anua. Gab Markotty is still with us. Ghana-Nigeria, one of those games definitely worth a look. A heavyweight qualifier here with Ghana looking to put their AFCON form behind them, and Nigeria perhaps better than their last 16 exits suggested. Lots to play for in this game. Nedim Anua coming into the show now. Ghana, Nigeria, Nedim, what are we looking out for in this one?
Oh, to be honest, I think the last time Nigeria beat them was, it was 16 years ago, and that seems crazy to say because in our minds, you know, Nigeria is such a strong force within the continent, but it's going to be a tough game. I think Ghana have a few players missing, and coming off the AFCON tournament themselves, where they were particularly bad. I think they finished bottom of their group and the expectations were so high. There's a sense of pressure there, but as is the case with a lot of those other ties, you know, you've got sides who've won their groups to try and get to this point. So the fact is, it's going to be a tough game, whichever way you want to see it.
Gab, if you were to predict how this game's going to go, who's it going to go in favour of?
It's fascinating. There's a totally different dynamic here, obviously, because this is two-legged. I agree with Nedim. I think Nigeria showed us some really good things, perhaps surprisingly so, because the expectations are pretty low going into it at the African Cup of Nations. But in this two-legged format, it's so tense. I could see Ghana perhaps shading the first leg, but that certainly won't mean that the tie is over.
Okay, so Ghana, Nigeria, one of the games coming up, plenty of them. In fact, we have a repeat of the AFCON final as Egypt and Senegal will also be facing off. Many looked ahead to this game coming up between the two of them. Will it be a revenge mission just 47 days after that final? As Senegal obviously winning that one. Nedim, do you think revenge will be on the minds of Egypt?
Yeah, for sure. I think in some ways it kind of has to be, because when you saw the disappointment that they had in the final, you know, you're seeing players crying on the field and you know how much it meant to them. So that was obviously a big blow. But the fact is they knew they had these two games here to try and qualify for the World Cup. And I think this time, this first game especially, will be a bit different because it's going to be in Egypt. You know, the last time, the style of play that they had and the like when they played against Senegal and throughout that tournament itself, where they weren't really on the front foot, didn't score a ton of goals. I think it's different now when you're playing in front of your home crowd and there is that sense of, you know, we want revenge, and as a consequence, it'll be a tough game. But one thing is for sure, Senegal as champions are in a great spot, and they're the highest ranked African team as well. So it's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a tough opening game, but you know, I think Senegal will edge it in the end, and that will be a huge disappointment for a lot of Egyptians, I would say.
Yeah, Senegal are big favourites going into that one, Gab. Would you agree with the heavyweight favourite tag?
I think so, just because, you know, Senegal were just so impressive and got stronger as the tournament went on in the Cup of Nations. I think Egypt would feel more comfortable, I think, if this was a single 90-minute match on neutral territory as well. I think the way the crowd plays into it is also going to matter, because Egypt, I don't think, can afford to just play on the counter unless they score. You could see it being a cagey affair in Senegal, being, all right, if you sit off us, then we're going to get you back at home on the 29th of March. And so I think Egypt have to be a little more daring, and that might be a little bit out of their comfort zone.
Another game to look forward to is Cameroon taking on Algeria. Both of these teams desperate to make it to Qatar after missing out on Russia. Been a lot of noise in the background from both sides as well, a lot of drama behind the scenes at Algeria. Also changes behind the scenes at Cameroon. What should we look out for here, Nadim?
Oh, well, this is an interesting one. I think when you look at the way Algeria performed at the African Cup of Nations, where they were nowhere near their best, and that was as defending champions. You know, they do feel like there needs to be a reaction there. And with Cameroon themselves, like, they finished third and there were celebrations that came at the end of it, but I felt like there was a bit of disappointment that they didn't actually make it to the final and they didn't go on and win the tournament itself. So I think, again, it's a tough spot. And, you know, I've got to hold my hands up and say, it just doesn't feel right to me that we're only going to be seeing five teams from the continent make it to the World Cup. You know, because as I say, all these teams have won their groups, yet still five of them are going to be dropping out. And that just seems a bit crazy to me. And unfortunately, it just means that for some of these ties, you know, somebody's going to be disappointed purely because they didn't manage to win a two-legged tie, even though they managed to win pretty much all of their group games. But I suppose that's the way things work for now.
Is this a golden generation for Algeria, Gab, that should be doing better?
I think they definitely should be doing better. I think there's certain players who, you know, were off their or were off their game or weren't there at the Cup of Nations. I think they're playing to show that they're the team that won it last time around, or second to last time around. And so I think it's just going to be really interesting contrast in styles. Again, I would expect something of a cagey affair here, and something that's really not going to be settled until the return leg.
Highlights tomorrow of all of these games available for you on ESPN, and a lot more talk about them on tomorrow's show on ESPN FC, when Ali Moreno will be joining me.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
These are the nations who have already qualified, and there are plenty of them. We know the nations who won't be going. We know a few more of those today as well, and one of the biggest upsets and shocks of the day was Italy. Right, we're going to just take a reminder and a look at how this is going. It was Italy and Portugal everybody was expecting to see in the final on Tuesday. But it will actually be Portugal against North Macedonia. Don, you commentated on the Portugal game against Turkey today, that 3-1 win. And now, with everything that you saw today, how do you see it going for them against North Macedonia come Tuesday?
Oh, they'll beat them. They'll beat them, Kay. honestly, they will. They will. I'd be stunned. I would be stunned if North Macedonia beat Portugal. The 3-1 scoreline was a weird one because people who have not seen the game will think, Portugal have just rolled over Turkey 3-1 and it was comfortable. It wasn't like that. There was periods in the game where Portugal were absolutely brilliant. They were sensational going forwards, but Danilo and Jose Fons played as a pair at the back, and they were very leaky. They didn't have a good game as a pair. And then once the game got to 2-0, you thought, yes, Portugal absolutely cruising. They go in at half-time. 2-0, you're thinking, right, they'll just see the second half through. The next goal is the important one in the game. Turkey get it. Then all of a sudden, panic stations at the back for Portugal. Fonten gives a penalty away. And Yilmaz, who led the line at 36, went for a harder skill. He tried to find the top corner with the right foot and sort of just whipping it into the bottom left-hand corner. And then from then, the game just got crazy. And Turkey were pumping balls inside the 18-yard box and going long. And they just needed a break. And the Portuguese manager made one or two changes. Leão come on, had a real impact. And then they scored in the last sort of minute to make it 3-1. But it was a brilliant game of football. But Portugal going forward can beat anyone. At the back, anyone can beat them, but not North Macedonia.
Oh, well, I'm sure that's what the Italians said. Anyway, enough of the international action. We have had plenty of it, and I'm sure if it was an international power ranking, North Macedonia would be right up.
They'd be in.
It is time for Shaka Power Rankings. Talk us through them, Shaka.
Leipzig are out after they draw at Eintracht Frankfurt. Real Madrid all the way down to eighth after you know what happened on the weekend, what a difference a week makes. I'm not sure that we've had that big a precipitous drop from someone who was number one 1 week and then you drop seven spaces. Anyway, never mind. Trabzonspor are in, top in Turkey, but no European football to speak of. Rangers are in just because I can't take Don moaning in my ear. AC Milan are in because Gab Marcotti and all Italy need some good news. So AC Milan, saying that, three wins on the bounce, top in Serie A, all joking aside, deservedly so. The rest speaks for itself. The top four, I think, are the best four teams in European football. Barcelona, I mean, the turnaround under Xavi, up into fifth. There can be absolutely no arguing with this. I'm ready to pack up and go home.
Don, what's this?
That's how confident I am.
I'll tell you what this is, Kay. Shaka, who's the form side in Serie A?
In Serie A? I don't know.
Juve.
Yeah, but Juve are done in what, sixth?
Yeah, fifth, sixth? In a minute.
Fourth.
Right?
Fourth, and they're fourth.
You see, Milan have won three on the board. What, three, and then drawn two before that?
I think off the top of my head,
They're the form side in Serie A, but they lost. Who they lose to? Was it Porto in the Champions League? They can't begin my top
Villarreal.
10.
Villarreal.
They can't be my top 10.
Off the top of my head, they're unbeaten in about 11 games in Serie A, I think.
Yeah, we lost to Villarreal.
So what
you're out.
What you want now, Don, is fourth place teams making it into Shaka's
exactly.
power
exactly.
rankings.
Exactly.
No. I think Juve deserve a mention.
All right.
They're 11th. Happy? You're very 11th.
Nadim, you okay with Shaka's power rankings?
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Yeah, listen, he's great for conversation and he's great and he's very thick skinned. So, yeah, that was a great power ranking, Shaka. I'm sure everybody.
Thanks, Nadim. Thanks, Nadim.
Well, let's see if everybody does agree. Frank?
Frank's fine. Frank's good.
I have to say, for the first time, I'm speechless. You know, I have nothing to complain about Shaka power ranking.
If Frank is speechless,
Shaka.
If Frank is speechless,
speechless,
I'm doing something right.
Yeah,
I'm doing something the whole
yes.
world wants.
Craig Burley would love that.
Yeah. All right. Let's hope Frank finds his voice for extra time.
Yeah. No, just one thing. You know, when we're going to see a French team maybe in that power ranking, maybe Marseille being second, Shaka, I don't know, maybe one day.
I had PSG a few weeks ago, Frank, and oh, goodness.
I understand. That's not a problem with Paris Saint-Germain, but check Marseille and Nice, maybe.
All right, I'll leave Rangers out next week and I'll put in Marseille.
Whoa.
You're the man.
Shaka chose violence. Right. That's how we're ending that one.
Speaking of choosing violence, there's Stevie Nicol. What's he doing?
We'll be answering your questions on Extra Time and hopefully Frank won't be speechless. If you check out our YouTube page, you will be able to stay up to date with Extra Time every single day.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That is all we've got time for on the latest edition of the show, but stick around. We have what we need. Extra time is coming.
Questions are written.
These guys will be answering your questions. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Shaka Hislop, Frank, who's not wearing his fake glasses, Gab Marcotti, and also Don Hutchison. Where's those fake glasses, Frank?
He's gone for the old Sean Connery look today, Frank.
That's crazy, but I lost my two real glasses, so I had to go to the pharmacy, and I bought, like, for 10 euros, fake glasses. So I see a little bit like that, but there, I don't see you anymore. You look beautiful.
More importantly, Shaka, did you complete Wordle today?
I did. I got it in two.
Oh, I haven't done it yet. Don't be giving us any spoilers.
I won't. I sure won't.
All right, first question is for you, Gab. Are you grateful for the World Cup becoming 48 teams? Italy might qualify that way.
Too soon! Too soon!
That's not nice.
Ezio!
He does have hedonist in the title, so...
Listen, I'm just going to refer you to the scoreboard, to those four stars on the Italy shirt, and remind you that there's only one country in the universe that has more stars. And there's a reason why Italy has its four stars. We've won four World Cups. You know what? It's time to let somebody else have a go. Some of those little nations that, you know, have only won one or none. There's so many out there. They all love their football. Talk to me once any other country gets the three World Cups. Then we'll have a conversation.
Tacky. That's like very tacky. Some people live in the past. We can see that. Some people love living in the past, you know. That's very tacky, Mr. Marcotti, you know, for some others.
Like our Gab says,
Frank,
there's only one other country,
Frank,
the whole universe.
I think you'll find... Excuse me. Mr. Frank LaBeouf, live in the present. I think you'll find that in this millennium... Italy and France have won the same number of European championships and the same number of World Cups, no?
No, you won more World Cup than we did. But I know that
in this millennium, since 2000.
It's millennium. Frank. Oh, yeah, yes, true. You're right. For the past six World Cup, hold on. 98, 2002, 2006. Yeah, six World Cup, Franks played three finals.
Oh, that's right. Good.
Emanuele's down, Charlie.
Here's another stat. Here's another good stat. In the last two World Cup cycles, Trinidad and Italy have failed to qualify in the same number of World Cups.
That's a very good stat, and that's a true one.
That's got to make you feel a bit better, Gab. All right, for Frank, how does it feel getting knocked out when everyone in the world thinks you're going through? What was it like in the dressing room and when you got back to France after the last game of the group stages of the 2002 World Cup?
Oh, man.
That was amazing. I came back to my place, and I remember having a breakfast while... Some games will go, you know, at night. And it was like, I say to my ex-wife, I say, did I go to the World Cup? Did we go to the World Cup? It's like I just lived a nightmare. And it's like I didn't see the World Cup coming up. That was crazy. That was shameful. That was awful. But let's say that we won everything in 3 years. So the 4 years was the end of the cycle. Bye-bye. That's what it is for Italy. So when it doesn't want to go right, it doesn't go right. All the game that they played, missed the penalty, missed the goal, and kicked out. It's what happened to us in 2002. The luck that you have, the stamina that you feel and you have, you don't have it. You lose it, and it's part of the game. And you are kicked out.
Gab. Another one for you.
Everybody, so,
To be fair to Frank, right? He's talking about how painful it was and it was the end of a cycle. There was a cycle in which they won a World Cup and the Euros. I am praying that Italy's cycle didn't simply consist of the COVID Euros in 2001 and that's it. So, or, sorry, 2021. So I hope you're wrong about this being the end of a cycle for Italy, because it's a really teeny tiny cycle.
Yeah.
Well, actually, Gab, the next question is to do with Italy's failures. For Gab, 15-year-olds now have only seen Italy win one World Cup game in 2014 in their lifetimes. Whoa. And they will not have a chance to see a second until they are 19. How do kids there see the national team?
Can I say something about these goofy ass stats? Like, oh, look, they're good. Like, I'm playing a knockout game. That's okay. 2006. Who the hell thinks like that? Seriously, England didn't lose a single knockout game, didn't lose a single game at the World Cup in the 1970s. Why? Because they didn't qualify. Oh, look, you know, I'm going to love. Can I turn it around? Can I turn around and say, oh, look, when Italy goes into the next World Cup, whenever that is, they can say, look, we haven't lost a World Cup game since 2014. What kind of stupid stats are these? It doesn't matter if you lose a World Cup group stage win. You could go on and win the World Cup while losing a group. We've seen it happen with Spain. So enough of these goofy statistics. The point is to qualify for a World Cup, and then when you're there, to reach your level. So for Italy, any World Cup in which they don't at least reach a semifinal is a failure. Not qualifying for the World Cup is a horrendous failure. These weird stats, they haven't lost, blah, blah, blah. Like in 2010, they drew all the group games. Oh, they couldn't win a group game. Well, they didn't lose a group game in 2010. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Isn't that close? I mean, what kind of nonsense is this?
Seriously. The best thing, Checker, the best thing about it is how well Gab's taken.
Oh. I love wound up Gab. Kay, do me a favor. Read some other goofy stat, please.
Okay.
Please give Gab another goofy stat.
Gab can wade in on this one, but I feel as though Don might have something to say about it, so I'll start with you, Don. Italy was exposed without their saviours from Juventus.
Ooh.
No Bonucci, no Chiellini, no Bernardeschi, no Chiesa, no Locatelli, no World Cup. Never forget, Juventus is the biggest club in Italy.
Oh, I'm not going to get involved in that, Gab.
Yeah, leave that for Gab.
Gab knows far more about Italian football than I do for me to say who the biggest club in Italy is, but it's not a bad point, though, is it? When you take all those players away...
Gab, is that goofy?
It's completely goofy. So, Benedetti wasn't selected, partly because he's not been good. Locatelli only just recovered from COVID. Bonucci's injured. Chiesa's been injured. You know, look, Chiesa and Spinazzola are out. Would Italy have been a lot better with those people? Yes, absolutely. But can it be an excuse? No, it's not an excuse. Same thing with all these Juve guys. Juve are fourth in the table this year. Juve are not having a good season. Juve got knocked out by Villarreal. Yeah, Juve have that long unbeaten streak, which, by the way, Don, it's 19 games, I think, not 11.
Oh, okay. Wow.
But so what? Don. They've been rubbish throughout. They've been drawing a bunch of games. So, no, it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't make a difference at all. It shouldn't take the Juve guys to win it anyway, even if they were all playing well. This was Macedonia that Italy just lost to. So, no, there's no excuses.
That's not the whole Macedonia. I don't even know.
And I'm calm.
Hey, you know what? You actually got schooled there as well, Don, for arguing that Juve should be in Xhaka's power rankings. Gab just told you.
Very
the run's not that great.
Very
not as good as it looks. It's better than what you said, though. And they are fourth, remember.
I know, that's what I said. I said fourth, but I mean, Gab put me right by saying 19, so they should be in the power rankings.
They're 11th. 11.
All right. This one has to come to you, Don, because you were on the call for Portugal's game against Turkey. Do Portugal really need Ronaldo? They don't seem like a team that needs to be carried. Currently, it's vice versa. Portugal carries someone instead of someone leading Portugal to victory. Lol.
See, here's the thing, Kay, right? And I could never, ever say it in commentary, and I don't really want to say it on here because I would never, ever, ever, ever try and disrespect Ronaldo. But Father Time, K, catches up to every single footballer. And Ronaldo, I have to say, was brilliant tonight for 45 minutes. He was, his touches, his vision, the execution of the little back heels and his one-touch passing was brilliant, but he faded in the game. So I was looking at Santos, the coach, at about the hour mark, and he was deep in conversation with his number two, and they were just fading in the game. And it was one of those where you go, a little bit like Ralph Rangnick at Man United, have you got the power and have you got the audacity to take Ronaldo off on the hour mark when you know he's going to go absolutely ballistic? And the answer was no, he didn't, and he left him on. And that's probably why they struggled a little bit, because there was a point in the game where they were carrying him because his legs were just starting to fade. They didn't take him off. They didn't do the right thing. In the end, they got the job done. But I understand the question. It's a very, very hard one.
Gab, are you laughing at what Don's just said?
Yeah, no, no. It's funny. Look, I'm drawing a parallel here, which maybe is entirely apt. But can you imagine if you're Fernando Santos and you substitute Ronaldo at minute 60 in what could be literally his last World Cup qualifying game. And then they come back and lose. This would be shades of, who was it? I don't want to bring back memories for you, Kay, but, and you were probably a child back then, but I remember Gary Lineker being substituted, I think by, was it by Graham Taylor against Poland, when he was like on the verge of breaking some scoring record. And then they go out, they don't qualify for the World Cup. Anybody remember this? It's the same thing. There's no way Fernando Santos is going to do that. No,
but you've got to do the right thing for the team, Gab. It doesn't matter if you substitute Jota, João Felix or Ronaldo. If you've got to do what you've got to do, because no one's got a crystal ball, if you feel as though that's the right thing to do for the team, then you have to do it as a coach, no?
It's Cristiano Ronaldo you're talking about. You're Portuguese.
What does that mean?
Nobody would know who Fernando Santos is if it were not for Cristiano Ronaldo. So, no, I don't. I mean, I think what you're talking about is you're always going to believe in the stardust, in the fact that maybe if Turkey back into it, maybe Fernando Santos, maybe Cristiano does something at the end. I mean, I take your point, balance, tactical, blah, 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 the running, but the man is only human. It would take somebody superhuman or somebody completely callous and reptilian to substitute Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, in a game like this. Unless you're four or five goals up.
So you're saying Ronaldo can never, ever be taken off for Portugal? Ever?
Not in a do or die game when they're less than three or four goals up. No, I don't. Like, I think a lot of people might say, oh, yeah, I'd take him off. But in real life, very, very few people would.
Yeah.
It's too big an ask for Fernando Santos, I think.
If I may, going into that conversation, you only have to be a fan of Ronaldo, and I've been hammered by the fans when I say that sometimes you have to think about retiring, where I never thought about Ronaldo having to retire right now, but it's part of your career to exactly know where you have to stop. Because you it's part of your career. So I saw the game today. I saw that after an hour, Ronaldo was struggling physically, and it would have been a surprise for me to see him going out. If you understand football, if you love Portugal and you are a fan of Portugal, you have to understand that it's for the good of the team that Ronaldo is going out, because evidently you can see that is not anymore in a good shape after an hour in that game, particularly in that game. So you have to have the guts of putting him out because of what everybody sees. It's only when you're a fan and you're completely blinded by the love that you have for Ronaldo that you couldn't see that it's more dangerous to keep Ronaldo on the field than to substitute him. That's just fair for the team.
Can I just address this? I'm just going to put this differently, right? Think of it in terms of risk-reward. If Cristiano Ronaldo wants, this is all assuming Cristiano wants to stay on the pitch, right? If he stays on the pitch and he doesn't run anymore and you lose and Portugal get knocked out, nobody is going to blame you. Nobody in Portugal, which is where Fernando Santos lives, is going to blame you for not taking Cristiano off the pitch against his will. But if you do substitute him and something goes wrong, then you're going to be massacred. And if you substitute him and you win, and Cristiano felt that he was doing great and he didn't want to come off, he's going to be annoyed with you. So you look at those outcomes, like I said, it's a no-brainer for Fernando Santos, for who he is. For somebody else speaking in abstract terms, sure, I completely agree with you.
All right,
No, disagree.
Well, no, the thing is, we are doing politics.
Extra time of extra time.
We are doing politics or we are doing football. And in football, you take risks. In politics, you manage.
All right. Shaka.
Yeah?
Let's say Wales qualify for the World Cup. If you're Gareth Bale, what's your next career move? Back to Spurs, MLS, back to Wales with Cardiff, Swansea, or another championship side?
As I said on the show, I don't think he was that great for Spurs when he came back, or certainly nowhere near as good, and I know he struggled with injuries then. And here's the difficulty with this question. Nobody can figure Gareth Bale out. Nobody knows what's going through that mind of his. And you just look at his performance for Wales and contrast that with his performances for Real Madrid. So the easy answer is just go back and play for Cardiff or Swansea or somebody and you're in Wales and you're happy. You've got enough money, but you know, that doesn't really make any sense for somebody of his talents. The only attraction there is that he's back on Welsh soil. But who takes that chance? And what is he asking for in terms of salary? Who takes that chance but for a Welsh club to bring him back? It's just... Anybody else, I think it would be a little bit more straightforward and you can make an answer and try to figure out what they're thinking. But nobody's been able to figure Gareth Bale out. And that's the issue.
Don, percentage chance of North Macedonia qualifying for the World Cup?
10.
Wow. So you give them a 1 in 10 chance to beat Portugal.
10% beating Portugal.
1 in 9. Well, 1 to 9.
If you push me, 5.
if we push you back.
4.
Oh my God. Yeah. Is that pushing you? Let's
sign off now before it gets down to zero.
All right.
4. I'm not getting lower than 4.
All right. Let's see what you say about the next one. It's for you, Don. How do you feel about Pogba blaming his inconsistent form on being played in the wrong position? I'm just asking, since you once said you could play anywhere on the field and still be capable of scoring from the halfway line.
Hold on. Yeah. I've seen Don play in goal. So to suggest that Don could play anywhere in the field, it's a little bit of a stretch.
I mean, Paul knows his own body. He knows his strengths and weaknesses. I don't really buy it, to be honest, Kate. I wouldn't blame your inconsistencies on the amount of time he's had at Man United to produce the standard in the consistencies of his levels and his ability. He's got more ability than most players could ever dream of. But you look at his Man United career, in my humble opinion, and he leaves me wanting so much more.
All right, Shaka. In a training session, do you practice your hand position in such a way that your save will fall in a safe place and a fellow defender can clear it, or is it just a lottery / luck?
Well, you don't position it so that it falls for a defender. If you're parrying it, you try to get power on it. In that, if it doesn't hit anybody, it goes a long way out and it falls harmlessly wherever it does. And if it does go towards a striker, it's coming at him so quickly that he can't adjust. That's the hope. But you don't practice spilling the ball into the path of a defender.
So when it does fall out nicely for one of your defenders to clear it, it is just lottery / luck.
No, depends on when you ask me. If you ask me right after the game, I say I saw him there. I saw Frank standing there. So I just parried it nicely for Frank, which will be a lie, but sure. That's what I'm claiming.
All right, Gab, we've got
one. And I would say that I called him just before.
Exactly, yes. Both of them lies, but we'll stick to it.
As fake as your glasses, Frank. All right, Gab. One last goofy one for you.
Yes! Yes!
Gab, will you be ordering a well-done steak with pineapple on top over a bed of SpaghettiOs tonight to forget this loss? Because surely nothing could be worse.
Why the SpaghettiOs? Why SpaghettiOs?
You know
no!
Can I point this
Leave
out?
Leave the place, Gab. Leave the
if
place.
If a genie had come out of a bottle and said, Gab, if you eat this well-done steak that Alejandro Moreno cooked for you, and you have it with the pineapple pizza, with some crappy canned pineapple, which Moreno grew in his back garden and then stuffed in a can for 10 years, then if you do this, then Italy will qualify for the World Cup. You know what I would have done? I would have said no. I have higher standards, and
rubbish.
I don't need to do this to qualify for the World Cup. That's some fugazi stuff. I don't need to do that.
Do we believe him?
No.
I do.
All right, Gab.
Because is that confident that, yeah, we're going to beat North Macedonia?
Let me ask then, would you have rather lost to North Macedonia in the semis or Portugal in the final?
Oh, easy.
Ooh. You know what? I think in some ways, it's going to sound trite, I care about the performance. And I actually think that I don't think they would have had this much of the ball. They would have had this many chances against Portugal. They might still have beaten Portugal, but they would have done it a completely different way. So if you're going to lose either way, I don't know. I'd rather lose here than lose in the final. Give you more time to digest it. And this way I can sit back and enjoy next Tuesday's games. So much at stake in these playoffs final and CAF and whatever. And the following day, I'm flying out to Doha after a Cord the Gavin Jewel show. And I can go and I can enjoy another World Cup as a neutral, which is a special experience.
Well, at least it's something to digest because he's not going to be digesting a well-done steak.
Did that just slip in that he's flying out to Doha for the Gab and Jules show? Did he just slip that in there without anybody noticing?
We're taping the Gab and Jules show in London. And then I'm going to the draw.
Oh, I thought you said you were going out to Doha to record. Oh, I thought.
Because Shaka and I were starting to feel really left out.
That's right.
Today. Everyone was in Madrid. Now
everybody's here, there, everywhere.
We're just here in the studio, keeping this.
I'll be keeping my eye on you and Jules.
You know, you always have to know what you're worth, guys. You know, if you are staying in the studio while everybody is traveling, it says a lot about you, guys. You have to talk to your superiors, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about
that's,
it.
That's very,
I don't know if that's a backhanded compliment.
That's very true, fake glasses, man.
Yeah. I was going to say, Frank with his £10 glasses on.
I know.
Yeah.
We've got to stop in case there are any more goofy ass questions that Gab doesn't like.
Please.
We need Gab to go.
Oh, yeah, the guy's upset and touchy now.
Tonight. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for your questions. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow.